Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
A complex jigsaw puzzle balancing political competence with geography, grouping and gender. That's the challenge facing EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen as she assembles what is essentially her cabinet of 27 EU commissioners. So how is Ireland's Michael McGrath likely to fare against nominees from across the bloc as it faces into a challenging 5 years ahead? Well, I'm joined from Brussels by Associate Editor with Politico, Suzanne Lynch, and by Jean Monnet, Professor of European Politics at Maynooth University, John O'Brien, and you're both welcome. So, Suzanne, for you first, we haven't sent a female nominee. The man we have sent, Michael McGrath, has four party colleagues who publicly voted against Ursula von der Leyen's second term. How big of a problem are both of those factors?
Well, look, I mean, the only person who knows that is Ursula von der Leyen. What we do know is that she has already met Michael McGrath in Brussels. They've had a meeting and now it is up to her to decide how to divvy up those jobs. Now, Ireland has been very clear. It has been one of the earliest countries to name its nominee and then has made a push for an economics portfolio. Now, I mean, there's been various reports that the economics brief is a very broad one. One possibility, for example, could be something in the field of innovation and research. That's something Ireland held before under Maura Geoghegan Quinn when she was commissioner. It would be a very good portfolio. It would also fit into this whole theme of competitiveness, which is a big focus for the European Union with actually today Mario Draghi, the former ECB president, he's unveiling a report. So that's a possibility. But look, it is, you know, it's all to play for in a sense that she's got 27 commissioners, including herself, to fill, but we do expect some light on this by the end of the week, possibly on Wednesday.
Okay, and do you think the fact that we nominated so early works in our favour or against us when it comes to getting a high-profile role here?
Well, in one sense, by coming out strongly and kind of declining to name a man and a woman, and Simon Harris, the Taoiseach, was very strong in the fact in his statement that, you know, Ireland had no obligation to do so. Other countries did follow suit. And did the same. However, in the last week, even in the last few days, there have been some changes. Romania pulled their original commissioner nominee and has now put forward a woman. Slovenia, on Friday, their commission nominee has withdrawn, and we expect the Slovenian government today probably to nominate someone new, probably a woman. So we are seeing that Ursula von der Leyen's, you know, pressure tactics, if you like, there with, you know, some of the smaller countries in particular, is beginning to work. Now, we don't know exactly why these governments and these national capitals have done so. But there are, you know, a number of females. And von der Leyen herself last week defended this, saying, if you don't ask, you don't get. Mm-hmm. And she made the valid point that, you know, it is a, you know, the European Union should have a gender balance. You know, half the European politicians, the population are women. So the fact, I think the gender issue is going to be a really decisive one in terms of who gets what job in this commission.
Now, John, once she makes her decision and announces the cabinet, all of those people still have to be vetted by Parliament. So will you talk us through how that's going to work?
That's right, Claire. Over the last 20 years or so, we've seen this new element added to the European institutional structure. And in some ways, it's very similar to what happens in the United States, where judges, for example, that are nominated to the Supreme Court, they have to face hearings in Washington. And where we've seen this operate in the past, it has a sense of theatre about it. Some MEPs deliberately use it as a way of making a name for themselves or scoring political points of one kind or another. But there's one real purpose to it, which is to ensure that the people that are nominated by the member states and that are then proposed by the Commission President, that they're competent in their jobs. For example, if we go back to Phil Hogan's nomination, it was for agriculture. And I think there were some people who wondered at the time about whether he could take on that role. But I remember watching the confirmation hearings and he sailed through because he'd been extremely well briefed. He did his homework and so on. But sometimes in the recent past, we have seen some commissioners who nominees who just haven't impressed the parliament and have had to be withdrawn by their member state countries because there was the threat that the European Parliament would not approve. Now, we should just be clear on this. The parliament does not have the right to vote down individual nominees, but what it can do is to vote down the entire commission. On the issue of gender, for example, which you've just talked to Suzanne about, it is possible that if we end up with only 9 or 10 out of the 27 commission members who are women, that the parliament could express its dissatisfaction and threaten to veto the appointment of the entire commission. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's unlikely, but it's very normal, actually, that 2 or 3 out of the 26 might be rejected and have to be replaced. We know also that Jean-Claude Juncker, for example, in 2014, he didn't tell us at the time, but he rejected 5 out of the nominated commissioners that were put to him at that time, even before getting to the confirmation stage. Okay. So I think we are going to see some theatre, but it's also a very important process because we have to know that the people who are being appointed to the commission are competent to do their jobs in those particular sectors.
All right, well, let's talk about some of the other factors at play here when we're looking at what job Michael McGrath might get, Suzanne. The grouping part of the jigsaw, Fianna Fáil, Michael McGrath's party, are aligned with the Renew group. And that's interesting here because it has several other members who are in line for high profile jobs. So that might, we're saying, work against him.
Yeah, that is a good point because he's part of that Renew group and already you've got some heavy hitters. For example, the former Estonian Prime Minister, Kaja Kallas, very high profile. She has already been picked as the EU foreign policy chief. That's a big job. It's technically a member of the commission. Thierry Breton, from France, Emmanuel Macron's nominee, he's been renominated. France is, you know, is going to get a big job. There's no doubt about that. Second largest country in Europe, and it would hope to get a big job there. And there are also others. I mean, one of the issues, though, for that Renew Europe is that it didn't actually do particularly well in the European Parliament elections. So, you know, they will be doing well to get a lot of those big jobs. Mm-hmm. But you're right, these different political groupings matter. Also, I mean, Ursula von der Leyen, she's from that centre-right EPP group. But the reality is that in the June European Parliament elections, right-wing, far-right parties did do well. So she can't just ignore that. So we are going to see some members of those other groups probably getting prominent positions. Italy, for example, Giorgia Meloni, a few months ago, you know, she was clashing with von der Leyen about various appointments. You know, her nominee is going to get something big. Fico, he's European Affairs Minister. Now he's from that Brothers of Italy party. Italy is a big country. It's also part of that right-wing, more right-wing group in the European Parliament. So, you know, they can argue that they deserve a big post too. So these are the kind of dynamics that will be playing out.
And John, geography also plays a role. Tell us how.
Yeah, there has always been a conscious effort to try and balance the appointments of large member states, small member states, Northern Europe with Southern Europe. I think the really interesting thing for me is the countries from Central and Eastern Europe, because in addition to Katja Kallas, who Suzanne has mentioned, we also have the Polish nominee, who is very close to Donald Tusk, Peter Serafin. He is thought to be getting a very senior portfolio in the commission and probably an economic one. We'll also have a commissioner for defence and security for the very first time. And the name that's mentioned there most often is the former Lithuanian prime minister. So I think we're going to see quite a significant upgrade in the representation of people from Central and Eastern Europe. And I think that's only right. After all, it's 2 decades since the last Eastern enlargement of the EU took place. But there are sensitivities there, and we're going to have a commissioner for the Mediterranean, for example, probably for the first time. And that's this effort to sort of balance things out. But I think it has to be said also, Claire, though, that where you have 26 different portfolios and 26 different commissioners, not all of them are that important. And I would say currently, there are probably only 7 or 8 of them that really count. And because most of what the European Union does is in and around the single market and the economy, its portfolios like trade, the budget, financial services and things of that kind, that really matter. So those are the ones I think to look out for.
And generally, Suzanne, is it a case that the countries who renominate the previous commissioner tend to get a pretty good, nice, meaty role second time out?
Yeah, I think there is something in that. I mean, they have already had a proven track record for 5 years. They have worked with Ursula von der Leyen. Now, one example actually would be Thierry Breton, the French commissioner. He has been quite a controversial pick over the last 5 years. He has publicly clashed with Ursula von der Leyen. So, you know, there's no love lost there. But at the end of the day, he is Macron's nominee. He's a heavy hitter. He does get things done. At the moment, he is central to the EU's policy on tech regulation, hugely important for the EU. Now, we don't expect him necessarily to get that again. But again, as John was saying, something senior there in that field. Another aspect of this is that there are, within the commissioner roles, there are executive vice presidents, more senior commissioners. So, for example, Breton there could get one of those, and you're kind of more of an overarching role there. So I do think there's also, though, for the ones that are renominated, and remember, the countries who renominated a commissioner did not have to, under von der Leyen's instructions, nominate a man and a woman. They could just renominate the person. In a way, I think it's more difficult for them at the European Parliament hearings because the MEPs will have 5 years of their record in front of them that they can question them on and say, well, why did you not do this? Why did you do that? So, you know, they're more of a known quantity, and that can be a negative. Generally, I think, you know, they've got their feet under the desk. They're well known, and they should expect something quite senior.
So what are you hearing about Michael McGrath and what role Ireland might get here? I mean, does anything come out of that meeting that he had with Ursula von der Leyen? Do you get to hear how it went?
We don't. It's very tightly held in the Berlaymont building here in Brussels. I mean, one possibility is that he is Ireland retains the current portfolio that it has under Mairead McGuinness, the financial services portfolio. One possibility, it has been mentioned, perhaps something like fisheries, which would be completely, you know, different, would not be in the economic portfolio. This research and innovation is an important one. Now, there are other countries that might have their eye on that one. Finland, for example, they have a female nominee. She's, you know, they've made it clear that they'd be interested in something like that. So that would be one to watch there. But, you know, those kind of roles would be what Ireland are looking at. You know, I don't think there's a question of Ireland getting trade commissioner or one of the really, really big ones at this point. But look, we'll just have to wait and see. But as I say, we may well know in the next few days.
Mm-hmm. John, what do you think Ireland will be pitching for here? One of the finance ones would be ideal, but do you think trade, as Suzanne says, might be too far of a stretch?
Well, it's also worth noting, I think, that trade, which has been hugely central to everything the Commission has done over the last sort of 30, 35 years, may not be as important in the next Commission, precisely because the world has changed. The EU, in a way, is caught between the United States and China, both of which are providing enormous subsidies to green energy companies of one kind or another for electrical vehicles and so on. So I think there is a change there, and the role of economic security, I think that may well be more important than trade. I think Michael McGrath is more likely to end up in something like research and innovation. If you look at the candidates for the top economic posts, the ones that Suzanne and I have outlined, I think most of those posts are already probably gone. I think for the reasons that you suggested earlier as well, the fact that Fianna Fáil voted against Ursula von der Leyen, perhaps for their own reasons and for good reasons, but that's probably a problem for him as well. But I think from an Irish perspective, research and innovation would be very, very good. And certainly, going back to your last discussion with a colleague from UCC, the universities would really welcome it, because amongst the different things that research and innovation portfolio covers is the Horizon Europe framework program, which is the biggest research program in the world. So if we end up in something like that space, I think that would probably be a much better outcome than people were predicting a month ago.
John and Suzanne, thank you both, Suzanne Lynch and John O'Brien. Coming up, is it going to get a lot colder later in the week? We'll find out.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.